Davis Van Opterp here with Stefan Biankoski, the two lone wolves this week. Usually we have obviously a bigger show, but it's just us two this week, and there's still a lot to talk about after the fifth round of the Bundesliga. But let's start with, I think, the biggest topic of the weekend, which was the fact that another manager got sacked over the weekend. That was Bruno Labbadia, Hamburg's coach. He got replaced by Marcus Gisdol. And it's that whole situation has kind of been interesting, to say the least. Stefan, what are your initial reactions to the fact that Bruno Labbadia basically got let go after maybe the best performance of the season from Hamburg?
Yeah, it definitely struck me as if the decision had already been made before Saturday's game, simply because I don't really know how you could sack a coach after the way Hamburg played on Saturday. Like you said, Gisdol has now came in, and I guess you could call him a reliable set of hands in the Bundesliga, considering his background at Hoffenheim, and he was also an assistant coach at Schalke, I think. But it's a shame to see, because I think Ross shares my thoughts on this, that why keep a... It actually reminds me a bit of the Werder Bremen situation, although I don't think Hamburg are as desperate as Werder Bremen were when they sacked Skripnik. But why keep a coach on during the summer if you're going to sack him after, you know, a bad start? Because I thought Labbadia did a fantastic job last season with Schalke. Okay, maybe not fantastic, but a really solid job with Schalke. You know, in a season...
You mean Hamburg?
Sorry, Hamburg, sorry. In a season that saw, you know, Stuttgart go down. And I just thought that he deserved probably more, you know, more time. This is kind of Hamburg's problem. I think they sacked 22 coaches in maybe the last, like, 20 years, I think. And... It surely gets to the point with Hamburg fans where they think, right, this isn't the coach's problem. This is the guys who are running the club. If the men in charge are going to sack a coach every time there's a bad run in form, then they're not going to get anywhere. And that's exactly what the problem with Hamburg is. They spent so much money this summer through a third party. It's worth noting, because it's not the club's money. It's a benefactor whose name I forgot, who doesn't own a stake.
Kuna is his name.
Sorry, yeah, doesn't own a stake in the club or anything. So they spent a fortune. Well, a fortune in Hamburg's times, not so much in the modern game. But, and you know, these things take time, and I just don't understand. The Bundesliga is supposed to be a league that takes a little more time with things, a little more smarter than its equivalent in Spain and England, and this certainly isn't an example of it.
Yeah, I think it's to go on Labbadia specifically, the biggest number that I saw that in a lot of publications after reading his sacking was that he actually only got 20 points in 22 games in 2016. So it's not, he did have a good run of form last year, and he got the team back up to 10th. And actually, even when the team started to creep back down to the relegation zone, he made sure that they could go back up to mid-table. But it was a lot of people called him the knight for Hamburg, and I think that's what he was. I don't think he is particularly a great tactician. He's not a guy like Tuchel. He's not a guy like even Nagelsmann. He's a guy basically like Niko Kovac, who can really motivate a team to get to a level above what maybe their level was before. And it's so a lot of people said that there is no knight now in Hamburg, even though they need one. And like you said, they had a very expensive summer, and they had spent, I think they spent the most of any Bundesliga team. But it was, I think he didn't get enough time, but I think this decision was coming maybe a few weeks ago rather than, like you said, then this quick decision, which is why, even though his team played extremely well, that's probably why he got sacked.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we kind of have to take the devil's advocate here, and if that is one, that it's that, you know, Labbadia has a really weird managerial history, in the sense that he doesn't really stick around that often. He started off at Darmstadt, he's played there for maybe two, or coached there for two or three seasons, then one season at Greuther Fürth, one season at Bayer Leverkusen, one season at Hamburg, then he did quite well at Stuttgart for three seasons, and again one season at Hamburg. So
one full season, that is,
so, yeah. Yeah, of course. So I think we're both in agreement that this probably was a wee bit unfortunate for the coach, but if there are Hamburg fans out there cursing us right now, it's probably worth saying that, you know, his record, and I can't really base this off anyone who's told me wise, but it seems though his record suggests that he doesn't make himself very invaluable when he joins these clubs, and he seems to be quite easy to dispose of.
Well, Gistel is the guy that they brought in, of course. So Marcus Gistel, the former Hoffenheim coach, he got let go last season after a similar run of form from Hoffenheim.
Gistel's another example, you know, which I think, I mean, when I saw them, I mean, I think that's partly the reason where I'm basing my argument on the fact that he was hired the evening of the day that they announced that they were sacking Labbadia, the morning after the Bayern Munich game. And I just thought that was a wee bit, I didn't think that was very classy from the club. I think, you know, even if they had lined this up, it's just not nice. It's not nice that they sack a coach in the morning and then they hired a new one. And it really does seem as though they had this planned out. Even if they did have it planned out, I think just for the sake of Labbadia, then you give it a day or two and then you're like, oh, we finally got someone. Rather than suggesting you had some guy standing in the shadows while you were already stabbing Labbadia in the back. But yeah, Gistel's a good coach, a decent coach. But again, he doesn't excite me. He's just...
He doesn't excite me either. I mean, he's a guy... This team has a huge attacking problem. And you saw how much Gistel had trouble trying to rekindle something at Hoffenheim when Roberto Firmino left. So the fact that he is the one trying to fix this attacking problem that Hamburg has, I mean, defensively, I actually think they're set up really well, although who knows if Labbadia got the personnel that he wanted to in the summer. There's a bunch of stuff that's come out now saying that he was scouting a player in France, and while he was doing that, the Dietmar Beiersdorfer, the club president, he was talking with the investor about how to play in the squad, even though Labbadia wasn't there, and that's all strange. But it seems like defensively that they seem to be actually set up decently well. It's just an attack that they obviously have the talent now, because they have Halilovic, they have Kostic, who they brought in, and they also brought in Bobby Wood, who's continued his form from the second Bundesliga, but they still haven't scored that many goals. And I think I've seen a lot, this number two, like they had seven big chances created in the first five games. So if Gistel is supposed to be the one that is supposed to fix that, I don't know if he's the right guy to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Hamburg are a team with ambition, and they should be, or a club rather, then, you know, you have to go pick up someone else. You have to stop shopping in the Bundesliga bargain bin. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, despite how obvious it sounds. I mean in the sense that why are you hiring a coach who is very best took Hoffenheim to mid-table? Are you hoping that he does that with Hamburg? Because that's exactly what Bruno Labbadia did, and you sacked him after five games. So... if Hamburg want to push on into Europe, they have to get a coach who will do that. And as Ross has said on this podcast a number of times, there seems to be a real fear of Bundesliga coaches, Bundesliga clubs rather, you know, shopping outside of Germany. And I think the club that we'll undoubtedly move on to at some point in the podcast tonight, Schalke, are a good example of that. I mean, Weinziel came in and everyone applauded it because he did a good job at Augsburg. But... at the time, I thought, yeah, I mean, I think it was when we were talking about who they could get, and that Weinziel's name was coming up, and I thought, yeah, but it's really predictable. Why does it always have to be, why does it always have to be a Bundesliga manager? Why can't they hire the hot new coach out of Italy or Spain or even England or Holland, rather? So, I don't know, I think these things depress me when you see the clubs in these situations and they just go for the obvious candidate when maybe a little more imagination could get them a lot better in the future.
Well, I think it's interesting too, because Gistel actually only signed until the end of the season. And I think that says everything you need to know about Hamburg is that they're basically, there was an article in Kicker today talking about this model that Dietmar Beiersdorfer had going when these ideas that he had with Hamburg. And they've already strayed completely from that. That's what the article said. And it just seems like there's no clear decision making process at the club. There's no clear infrastructure there at the club. So why would someone like Marcus Gistel, who's trying to resurrect his coaching career, why would he sign for a club that seems to be in complete disarray at the top for more than a year? I probably, if I was in his position, I'd probably make the same call.
Yeah. Exactly. So I think you're spot on there. And I mean, I guess it remains to be seen. I mean, if Hamburg end up, I mean, I think at this point, I think Gisdol's probably been brought in to say, right, at the very least, you've got to avoid relegation. And I think that's why he's only been given a contract until the end of the season. But I mean, even then, I mean, what do Hamburg fans have to get excited about? You know, it's just, it's never. So what happens if Gisdol finishes 10th this season and then, you know, Hamburg's blowing another 15, 20 million next summer and then, you know, he's sacked when he loses the first couple of games? It's just this never-ending cycle, which. You know, it's not just Hamburg who do this in the league. There's a few clubs who seem to be, you know, just repeating, repeating, repeating failure, and it's a shame to see.
Well, it's a positive never-ending cycle, which is the rotation policy going on at Bayern right now. After midweek, Ancelotti made it clear before the game that he was going to make a lot of changes from the Hertha Berlin game in midweek. So he brought in Renato Sanches, and he brought in Joshua Kimmich, and he brought in a lot of, he made a lot of different changes, including taking out Ribery and putting Kingsley Coman on the wing. But they didn't really look that well. They didn't look too good, Stefan, did they?
No, they didn't at all, actually. And, you know, it's interesting because, I mean, I actually missed the Hertha game because I was in Leverkusen midweek. But the game against Ingolstadt last weekend, they looked terrible. And I think a lot of people just kind of gave them the benefit of the doubt and said, you know, there's something wrong with this Bayern Munich pitch. There was something up with it. And I think they've now relayed it. And, you know, people were willing to give Bayern the benefit of the doubt in that game, even though they'd again shown pretty poor performance against Schalke the week before that. But on this pitch in Hamburg, which was spotless, they were again really, really average. It's concerning for a certain point of view, and I think it's exciting for us guys who cover the Bundesliga because, you know, I was literally watching that game with you know, full trepidation, really, really hoping Hamburg could pull it back for or score a goal just to see what would happen. And you know, of course, you know, a moment of madness or a moment of brilliance from Ribery to skip past Sakai and then cross the ball for Kimmich, but it was just another performance in which, you know, I think I said at half time on Twitter, I was like, from what it seems, it's another effort for, or this is another weekend of, you know, Bayern playing crap for 70 minutes and then Lewandowski pops up with a wonder goal, and it kind of had that kind of ring to it. And even though that's fine, and on paper, it looks as though Bayern are fantastic, Ancelotti has his 100% record. I think I'm right in saying it's the best ever start for a Bayern coach. But again, for us watching the games, I think it's quite clear to see that this team is nowhere near the performances they really should be playing, especially with you know, the Champions League opponents that are coming up.
Yeah, I was going to say, because the Champions League, the opponent that is coming up is the team that they lost to in the semifinals in the Champions League last season. And do you think so? But the thing is that, I mean, this is a different coach, it's a different philosophy. Do you think, how do you think Bayern, or Ancelotti's Bayern, I should say, are going to perform against pretty, almost a very, well, a very similar Atletico Madrid team?
I think it's really hard to tell, actually, simply because we haven't really seen Bayern at their very best under Ancelotti yet. Now, I know Bayern fans are probably listening to this saying, well, hold on a minute. Alonso was on the bench, Boateng was on the bench, Ribery, Robin, Vidal, these guys were all on the bench. But the team that we saw against Hamburg wasn't too different from the one we're probably going to see against Atleti. That back line of Alaba, Hummels, Martinez, and Lahm. Maybe Boateng might come in for Martinez or Hummels, but it's
Well,
not.
Hummels, I think, is he actually got he left the game with a knee injury, so who knows? I think Ancelotti will reveal on Tuesday whether he's going to play or not.
Yeah.
But I think that's but basically but Frank Ribery actually was on the bench too, and I think that was very evident when because Kingsley Coman was basically not creating or being as enthusiastic on the ball as Frank Ribery was, and I think that was a huge sign too that Ribery still has a lot to offer this team, and I think it's a little troubling for Bayern that they're relying on the creativity of Frank Ribery, who has missed so much time over the last 2 seasons, to basically create everything, a lot of the chances that they have in the final third.
Yeah, and to be fair, we did see this at times under Pep Guardiola when You know, the team were almost entirely reliant on the brilliance of Arjen Robben. So, you know, like you said, I mean, these guys aren't spring chickens. They're quite old now and they're quite injury prone. But having Robben and Ribery on the bench, or at least to play, is a huge deal. But yeah, you're right. I thought Kingsley Coman was very average, and I actually thought Sanchez was also very average as well. I'm just not entirely sure what he's supposed to do in this team right now. You know, Thiago, an outstandingly superb ball for Ribery for the goal. That's the kind of thing he does. He's almost like the playmaker. Kimmich obviously gets around the pitch. He makes himself useful, and as it seems right now, he's quite happy to be scoring goals. But I don't know what Sanchez done. I know what Vidal does, and I know Vidal will almost certainly be starting in the game against Atleti because he is undoubtedly their big game player. He seems to really almost seems to reserve himself for those games at times. And we'll probably see Alonso come in as well. So, but worrying again from Coman, because I thought at times last season he was really off the boil. Although he's still very young, so I can't be too I cannot be too critical of him, but. In fact, one of the main ones I'm actually a bit worried about is Lewandowski. He looked good on the ball at times, but he seems to be really quiet. I don't know if that's because he's not getting enough service, but it seems to be most of the balls were going through Müller on Saturday, and he could have scored two or three, actually, to be fair to him. But it's just worrying. Maybe this is just a case of Bayern not stepping up the game until they absolutely have to, and these players are maybe they'll step up when they face a solid opponent in. I don't think you can get much stronger than Atleti, at least to start 11. I think they're a fantastic team. And as we know, they caused all sorts of trouble for Bayern last season. I think a number of these players will know that. So, but if they go into this game and they get royally thumped, then quite rightly, I think people start asking questions of Ancelotti, because that's just maybe a month. That's now 5 games into the Bundesliga. And we still don't really know what's going on with his team.
Well, asking questions of a manager that hasn't lost a game this season, has only conceded one goal in all competitions. Yeah, I think that's a little bit of a stretch. But I think Renato Sanchez is a really interesting point. It's clear that Carlo Ancelotti wants to get him game time, which is why he seems to be direct swapping him with Arturo Vidal. But it's pretty clear right now that he's not Arturo Vidal. And like you said, I think Vidal is going to be one of the biggest players that's going to show up in midweek. And I think he's going to basically do everything he can to make sure that Bayern do not repeat what they did in Madrid just earlier this year. Well, obviously, there's a lot of other Champions League victors. We're not going to get into every single one, but we want to blow through them all. Dortmund, of course, they play the other Madrid team, which is Real Madrid. What do you expect from that game?
Well, we saw Dortmund at their attacking best at sorts against Freiburg. I know they didn't score as many goals as they have in recent weeks, but you know, the attacking line looked really good. Dembele and Emery Moore looked fantastic. But I was really kind of I was a little worried by how fragile the defence looked. And
defence was a big sticking point for me too.
Yeah, I think it's just, and that's really just the extent of it. I think if someone was to ask me what I thought of Dortmund right now, I would say, yeah, they could probably score against anyone, but against a team like Real Madrid, I'm terrified to think how many they could concede. So, you know, high-scoring game, I don't really expect them to win this game by any means. And to be fair, they don't really have to, because of the way the group's lined up. So I'm not too worried if they go ahead and lose this game. But if I was Thomas Tuchel, it seems as though at the moment Dortmund are just happy to be scoring more goals than their opposition. I don't know how well that policy works against a team like Real Madrid.
Well, it's interesting because I think this actually is a pretty career-defining game for Thomas Tuchel. Not maybe the same magnitude of the cup final last year or something like that, but he's going up against a pretty big team, and this is the first really big team that he's facing as the coach of Dortmund. And I think that I mean, he's come up short against Bayern at every turn. He has he's came up short, of course, against Liverpool and his predecessor last spring. So I think this game is going to be really interesting. It's going to be really interesting to see how Tuchel approaches this game, whether he basically plays more against the ball and forces Real Madrid to have the ball, or whether he's going to try to maneuver his attack the way that he likes to against a pretty good Real Madrid team.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, actually, because Jurgen Klopp, throughout his time, a lot of the big games that his tenure would be remembered for are the big games in the Champions League. And that's kind of the whole point of, I'm sure Liverpool fans are quite happy to admit right now that, you know, one of the aspects of Jurgen Football's style is that he makes his teams perform really well against big teams. And although I think Thomas Tuchel is very comfortable in the job at Dortmund, and they're doing remarkably well, don't get me wrong, I think being the manager of Dortmund these days also requires you to really give a good stab at the Champions League. No one expects you to win the Champions League, but I think the fans and critics really expect them to be getting to the latter stages. And if Tuchel does continue to show, as you suggested, that, you know, he doesn't know what to do in these big games against teams better than him, then that might be a black mark in his record.
Yeah, I mean, the run that he's had, obviously, is against not Real Madrid-like teams. I mean, Legia Warsaw, Darmstadt, even Wolfsburg. I mean, you saw Wolfsburg's performance against Werder Bremen at the weekend. I mean, they're not a very impressive team either. And then you see Freiburg. Of course, they're supposed to beat Freiburg. They just got promoted. But even then, they struggled a little bit, especially defensively. And I think that's going to be a really big sticking point. All right, let's go to the next two games a little bit more quickly. Of course, Leverkusen drew their first game, blew a lead, but now they're against CSKA Moscow. What do you think they're going to do against Monaco?
Yeah, this would be a really interesting game. I think most people expected Tottenham to beat Monaco in the first match there. I mean, I didn't watch the game, but it really looked like Monaco, you know, caused a few surprises. On the plus side, I think Leverkusen are slowly getting back to their best. I was at the game on Wednesday against Augsburg, and, you know, sure, it was 0-0, but they really should have scored about five or six goals, I think. And even though Calhanoglu still doesn't seem to know what he's doing, Calhanoglu right now is playing like a guy, you know, like a basketballer in Space Jam, as if some aliens came along and just stole all his talent. The guy couldn't take a touch, he couldn't make a pass, anything. But him aside, I think Leverkusen looked better. And perhaps most importantly, Chicharito really looks back to his best, as we saw against Mainz. That was a really, really good performance from Leverkusen, because Mainz are no pushovers in the Bundesliga, and to come back from that game, from going down, and to score two goals from Chicharito really suggests that, you know, anything could happen. So I think they've got a solid chance against Monaco if they can show the kind of performance they have in the last two Bundesliga games.
Yeah, I think the asterisks you have to put on the performance at the weekend is all the midfield talent that Mainz had tried to acquire and develop they're basically gone. That's why they've had to play with Fabian Frey and Daniel Pruszynski in midfield. But I think Chicharito looked really good despite that. Of course, a hat trick against Mainz, and maybe they'll have a chance to debunk the Monaco's historically good defense, at least in the last few years. Now, Gladbach, of course, playing in another profile game against another big Spanish giant. They're playing, but they are playing against a Barcelona team without Lionel Messi. How do you see that game going?
I think it'd be quite interesting. I'm not too sure about Gladbach in the Champions League this season. I know under Schubert, they really did, you know, they threw their own punches against the likes of Man City and Juventus, rather, and Sevilla, actually. Rather than Man City last season, but in that opening game against Man City, they really looked like they're out of their depth, and I really can't. I really don't see them doing any better against Barcelona. I think when this draw was drawn, I quite simply said, I think best Gladbach can hope for 6 points against Celtic, and then, you know, see what happens against the bigger teams. And I don't think that's a bad strategy to go along with at all. Sometimes you just have to accept you got a bad run or a bad draw, and you know, the Europa League beckons, and it's really as simple as that. I mean, I'd love to say Gladbach could really give Barcelona a good show of it, but I don't think they can.
Yeah, looks like Andre Schubert has tried to save Raphael for this game. He has been experiencing some injury issues, so it's interesting to see if he comes back into the team, if they can really crank it up and up notch again. Of course, you saw in midweek against Leipzig that they really struggled to get their attack going more than they usually do. But as you said, Manchester City, they got on the board really early, and they basically set the tone early. So how Gladbach plays in the first 5 minutes of this game may be what determines if they even have a chance at home against a Barcelona team, even without Lionel Messi. Of course, they scored a lot of goals over the weekend against Sporting Gijon without Messi. So Gladbach's defense already struggling, so who knows what they're going to be able to do. So we basically blew through the Champions League because we wanted to go into some more fixtures that were actually, I think, interesting to the both of us. Let's go to the one on Sunday first. That was against Cologne and Leipzig, two teams that have really shocked the Bundesliga this season. I think people thought that Leipzig was going to be good, but they didn't know how good. And now we know that they are actually that good and that they have been able to take teams on and get a lot of points in the early going. They currently sit on 9 points, and the team above them with 11 points is Cologne, which has been, they've basically shocked everybody with their unbeaten run, an unprecedented, previously precedented beaten run, I should say, not unprecedented, but they haven't been this good in a really long time. Stefan, what did you see from that game on Sunday? I know you said, you tweeted out that you liked watching Leipzig play and then locked your door to make sure that nobody could complain to you about it.
Yes, exactly. I think both these teams have been really impressive so far. I think no one really expected this from Cologne at all, but, you know, the last few seasons they've really cemented the defensive fortitude, and I think that's really helped them this season. And it's quite easy to then, well, not easy, but once you have that, that means you can stick someone like Modesta or Osako up front and just kind of hope for the best. And that's kind of what happened. Completely different style from Leipzig, are far more open and far more friendly in terms of, you know, they're quite happy just to push forward with numbers, and their midfielders kind of float around and don't do much tracking. So I thought it was a fascinating game in that regard. Oliver Burke scored, which is great for you know, us fellow Scots. Good to see him doing well. Although, I think aside from the goal, he didn't actually offer that much. He did look a little lost at times when he was running around that front line. I think I'm really interested by this Leipzig side. I think I tweeted this out after the game last night, was I really interested by the way that Heisenhüttl is rotating this team. And by that, I mean they've obviously got, some people like Selke and Burke started yesterday, and then they were able to bring on Poulsen and Timo Werner, and undoubtedly they'll probably swap that around for the next game. So it's an interesting way of running a squad where, you know, rather than having your standalone strikers and you have your really first-choice players, Leipzig seem quite happy to just kind of rotate from one week to the next because it's six and a half a dozen. So I'm really interested by that. And I find, and as you said, it's quite interesting that these two teams have done really well so far this season. And rather than one of them kind of kicking the other one out of their form, they were quite happy to settle on a draw.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you mentioned settling for a draw at the end, because I think that's exactly what Cologne was doing. And I think that's what really needs to bring Cologne fans back down to earth a little bit, that Peter Stürcher still does not have that ambition as a, it, or maybe not has, maybe doesn't have that ambition as a coach to really go for a result at home against one of the more informed sides in the Bundesliga. He really, you saw that opportunity when Konstantin Rausch actually got hurt. I thought it would have been interesting to put Jonas Hector back as a left back and bring in a more attacking midfielder to try to get that game winning goal. But instead he just switched out like for like and brought in on Mladenovic, I think, who was making his season debut for Cologne. The Cologne fans can obviously correct me on that, but I just feel like there's, even though they have had this historic start for them, they have 11 points, they're in the Champions League spots, which is really, really not where they belong in terms of where the narrative of the team it was going into the season, but they still don't have that ambition to just go for it and just try to be a top flight team and try to push for the European spots. I mean, that's a point that they could, that really could help them in the mid table. And Stürcher was really comfortable just letting the game play out, having their defense sit back, which is usually what he likes to do, and has Modesta and Osaka, who's been in really good form, work on the break. And I was really shocked to see that he didn't really have more ambition to try to get that extra 2 points in a very friendly atmosphere in Cologne.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It definitely seemed at one point that Cologne were just happy to sit back. Osaka's goal alone was actually a bit of a fluke in the sense that he just kind of took a swing at it and it kind of went top left corner, top front corner. Don't get me wrong, outstanding finish, but I think you're absolutely right. I think it probably tells you a lot about the way the two teams are, that Cologne were quite happy to settle for a draw at home, and Leipzig really threw everything at this away. So I mean, I think I say this in the podcast every week, and I'm sure people are sick of it by now, but I really do enjoy watching this Leipzig team. And, you know, we can debate about their existence at the club another time, but just simply down at football, I'm really enjoying their existence in the league right now.
Yeah, Hasenhüttl, I think, has really made their football enjoyable. I mean, he's not afraid to go at teams. He wasn't afraid to do that when he was the coach at Ingolstadt either, and I think that's really a good sign that he's continuing to keep this Leipzig team ambitious. He knows that he has a very young squad that has a lot more athleticism, so he seems to be motivating them. I mean, you saw Naby Keita, who was playing in a midfield position that we haven't really seen that much. We saw it a little bit in the preseason, Naby Keita playing in a deeper midfield position, but he was really good last night. And it seems like Hasenhüttl has a lot of confidence in him. And I thought that Marcel Sabitzer, who hasn't really been that good that season, he hasn't really been discouraged by his poor performances this season. He looked really good in this game, and I think the fact that Hasenhüttl can keep this team motivated and have them go at a team like Cologne, who is still above them in the table, I think that's a really encouraging sign for all those people that want this Leipzig team to succeed in Eastern Germany. All right, well, let's move on to the other game that I think we both thought was interesting of overachiever, which is Frankfurt against Hertha Berlin. Now, that draw was a little bit more entertaining because we saw, obviously, Hertha get out to an early lead with a penalty, but then Eintracht maybe just had a flurry of goals before halftime, and then Hertha was able to get the lead back, and it went back and forth, and it was what football fans sometimes like to see, these back-and-forth games. What did you think of these two teams on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, the reason we mentioned these two games is because it's four clubs who have really overachieved this season. I find it remarkable that, like I said, rather than one team, you know, knock the other one off their peg, they've all four just seem to have came to a stalemate, which makes things even more interesting because it means they still get to keep that element of, you know, good form. And this was definitely the case with Frankfurt and Hertha. I know Hertha were just coming off the back of, you know, a defeat to Bayern, and I think I was watching the game at the time with Ross, and I said to him that, you know, if Hertha were to pick up a win here, and at the time I think it was 3-2, so I said, you know, God, if they go on to win, this would be a huge result to, you know, not only to jump back from a defeat to Hertha, to Bayern, but to go to Frankfurt and to take a win, that'd be huge. But obviously Frankfurt,
especially with the way that other clubs have been performing in Frankfurt, so that's definitely true.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that was the point I was going to make, was that obviously Frankfurt then pulled the goal back last minute, and I think that just encapsulated perfectly the way Frankfurt have been playing this season. You know, I think Paul Dardai's kind of different coaches. I think Dardai's kind of done really well to cultivate this squad. And, you know, unlike, you know, Leipzig, who have a number of options and can freely swap and change, I think this Hertha team is very specifically put together, you know, with Pekarik at right back and Mitchell Wieser at right mid, and especially Ibisevic in the middle as a striker. I think each of these players are so specifically well-choiced in those positions that Hertha really click very well. It's, you know, you watch them and they look like a large machine with a number of clogs just working together. While on the other hand, Frankfurt under Kovac, and I've said this a number of times in the podcast already this season, they're just really well-worked. You know, they're very organised. They run really fast. They work really hard. And, you know, as I predicted in the start of the season, I swear to God, I'll stop going on about this eventually, but I really thought that was going to make a difference. I think it is enough to make a difference at the bottom of the table. I just didn't expect them to continue going on. And, you know, they picked up some really big scalps going into this game. So I think at full time, I don't think either coach was too upset about the idea of taking away a point from this game, because I thought both sides looked really impressive, and I expect both of them to continue going on and performing well.
Well, you look at the players that Frankfurt brought in over the summer, they actually haven't had a really strong transfer policy over the last few years, which is one of the reasons why they've basically have struggled to stay in the Bundesliga in the first place. But you saw Marco Fabian, he looks really good. And he is a Mexican player that had no experience in Europe. And then last season, he looked like a complete bust. But this year, I mean, Kovac has given him a lot of responsibility, playmaking responsibility in the final third. And Danny Blum is, or excuse me, Blum. He was a player that they got from Nuremberg, and he's basically known for his place. Yeah, Danny Blum, I was correct. He's a player known for his pace, and he was kind of a player that helped Nuremberg get close to promotion last season, and he looked really good too. Obviously had the assist for the goal, and I think that Frankfurt is heading in an interesting direction that I don't think a lot of people expected coming into the season.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to see how well they can do, because I really like Hertha, I really like Frankfurt, and the other two teams mentioned. And it's interesting that they've almost swapped positions with the teams at the bottom of the table, such as your Werder Bremen, your Hamburgs, and your Schalke's, most importantly perhaps, and maybe Bayer Leverkusen to a lesser extent. So it's not only just that the big teams are doing poorly, but these lesser sides who you'd expect to be in the bottom half of the table are doing really, really well. They're not just picking up points against bad teams here. They're all putting in really strong performances. So it's a credit to the league, and I think it's a credit to the depth of the league at the moment.
All right, well, that's a pretty good summation of the fifth match day of the season. Of course, there's a lot of other things that happen, but instead of going into all of it, let's just talk about what we want to shout from the Tribuna this week. It's going to be a shorter edition this week because there's only two of us. So, Stefan, why don't you go first? What do you want to shout from the Tribuna this week?
Yeah, I mean, I was really impressed, or maybe not impressed, but I think something we definitely have to mention is the way that Werder Bremen won. They simply did win 2-1 against Wolfsburg in the late game on Saturday. I think Wolfsburg seemed to have just kind of lost their mojo after that defeat to Dortmund. But I was really impressed with the way Bremen played. They looked like a new team under, you know, caretaker coach Alexander Nuri. He brought in Mane, who was a player playing in the reserves with Nuri at the time. So he's obviously, since the coaches came into the first team, he's brought him in as well. And, you know, he's not the best player in the world, but he threw himself around. He kept running, and sometimes that's all you need. And a lot of the players played off him quite well. In particular, I thought Gnabry really looked fantastic in this game. He's not exactly... he's still not very... he's not exactly a rounded off player yet. He doesn't have the discipline perhaps needed of a top player, but he still has that raw talent, and you know, he's really finding his feet now. And I thought he caused all sorts of trouble for a Wolfsburg team who, you know, just didn't really look that interested in doing anything. Gomez was again all over the place. I thought Błaszczykowski looked really tired on the right hand side. I actually mentioned halfway through the game, I kind of pondered on Twitter, you know, maybe Kuba might be better in a central midfield role. Maybe, you know, because he doesn't have the legs to accelerate past players like he used to. In fact, the only player who I thought had a really good game was actually Gerhardt, who was obviously the young player they bought this summer, who, he's the only one who really looked interested in actually winning the game. Castile's also pulled off a few good saves as well, so he deserves credit. But, if you guys are listening to this podcast and you haven't watched now, go Google Alexander Nuri dance at full time, because he ran on the pitch, and I don't even know how to describe it, Davis. It was almost like, you know, an NFL celebration that,
yeah,
like receivers.
That's what I thought of too, as well.
When they run into the touchline or the touchdown zone, but you know, high knees jumping up and down, hands everywhere. He went absolutely crazy, and the Werder Bremen fans were singing and dancing outside the stadium as if they'd won the Bundesliga. You know, so it's hard not to feel for that club who've gone through a really crap summer and start to the season. So yeah, that's what I'll shout.
Yeah, I think Bremen is a team that is really likable at the moment. I mean, you saw Nuri on the sideline, not only celebrating the goals like in Klopp style, running down the sideline, but he was really trying to push this team to go forward with the ball. And I think that really suits Serge Gnabry's style. And I think even though they don't really have a lot of playmakers, they have a lot of hardworking players. So I think that was a really great thing to shout. The thing I'm going to shout, though, you talked about Wolfsburg's underwhelming performance. Schalke, of course, are still winless, and this, of course, happened to Gladbach last season, losing their first five games. But, I mean, Schalke just do not look interested in winning at all. I mean, the best player on the field was probably the player who got the best marks, I should say, from some of the sources that I read, was Benedikt Höwedes. And to me, he just looked like the only player that was interested in playing in the first place. And I think that Hoffenheim, they weren't really that impressive, and they were able to still boss Schalke. I mean, Andrei Kramaric was not a player that turned out to be a dynamic striker. And yesterday he looked like Robert Lewandowski going against that Schalke defense. Marcus Weinziel, he was sitting on the bench at full time. You saw that Benedikt Höwedes was really trying to push forward because there was no initiative in the team. And the defeat that you saw on Weinziel's face was probably one that you saw on Viktor Skripnik's face before he got fired. But Schalke can't really fire Marcus Weinziel right now because they brought in Heidel and Weinziel together. And unless they're basically going to give up on this project that they started a few months ago, they're just going to stay where they are. And unless the Mainzer can get some excitement out of this team, they're not going to win any games.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's really worrying that, I think, like we said at the start of the season, this turn in form turned, was the thing that really worried me wasn't the immediate impact of, Mainzer having a bad run of form and then perhaps getting sacked. It's what this really means for the club that, they've hired arguably the best men for the job that they could in Germany, and they still can't seem to do anything. I didn't watch the game, so I really can't pass too much comment on, how Schalke played. And like you said, you've done it quite well yourself, but when you have guys like Huntelaar and stuff in the team who've been there for so long, and I know I do kick Huntelaar every single week, even if he does score, I just don't know how else they're going to turn things around. They have the team, they have the players, but there's just something missing there. Weinziel can only do so much tinkering with the tactics and the squad selection before he has to turn around to these players and say, right, guys, what's up here? Because you have players like Mbolo and stuff who just came into this team and they're still not playing very well. So it's worrying because, I don't understand. I don't think Weinziel should be given any more time than the likes of, Skripnik or Labbadia at Hamburg as well. I think arguably he's under more pressure, and quite rightly, the money they've spent and the squad that they have. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw I would be surprised, because I think the club would probably feel a bit stupid if they sacked Weinziel so early, but it's only a matter.
Well, I think one other thing I wanted to say before we wrap this thing up is that I don't think that Heidel has actually gotten as much critique as he probably should have for assembling this team. I mean, Dortmund brought in, I think, just as many players as Schalke did in the summer. I think Schalke brought in a few more, but Dortmund brought them in at the beginning of the summer. They had a whole summer to train under Thomas Tuchel, and Thomas Tuchel didn't use players like Emre Moore and Christian Pulisic until they actually were vetted in the team. Weinziel didn't really have a choice in assembling the team that he has, because that's the team that Heidel assembled for him, and a lot of the transfers were made late. I know that Konoplyanka is a really good player. I know that Bentaleb and Stambouli were pretty quality players, but if you're giving Weinziel not a lot of time to work with these players, of course he's not going to get a lot of results.
You're right. I think the players that they did sign, aside from maybe Mbolo, you're right. Bentaleb, Babarama, and some of the other guys, especially a man from Sevilla. I can't remember his name. I can never pronounce it. It really looked like Schalke just looked at all the players that were transfer listed this summer and then picked which ones they wanted. Aside from Mbolo, don't get me wrong. These guys have come into the team and they're better than the players that Schalke were missing, but it looks like they just picked up who they could pick up. Perhaps unlike Dortmund, who've done well to sign young, hungry players, it doesn't seem like this. Half the guys Schalke have signed this summer are Premier League has-beens and guys who have made their fortunes and perhaps aren't that interested in, a brand new start. Saying that, Mbolo really should be there running circles around defences, so I really have no idea what's going on, but I guess we'll have to see and see what happens.
All right, so a lot of interesting midweek fixtures coming up, for Bundesliga teams, and it'll be another interesting match day next weekend as well. We'll be back next week, hopefully, with a bigger cast. You can always follow us on Twitter. We're at Tribuna Podcast, and also at SB and Kofsky, and at Davis_Fanopter. Thanks for listening, guys. See you later.
Thank you.